episode 19.
It's time to breathe new life into the social entrepreneur by empowering you to make a living through fulfilling work that will impact lives. You'll make money, but more importantly, you'll make a difference. Welcome to the Change Creator Podcast. It's time to build a business with purpose. Now here's your host, Adam Force.
Hey everybody, Adam here, and today I have a very special guest to help you with all your business planning needs. He's written several books on business planning. He's known as the Obi-Wan Kenobi of business planning. He's also a venture capitalist, and he's going to give us some tips on what investors look for, while at the same time he's an entrepreneur who started Palo Alto Software, which went from 0 to 40 employees and became a multi-million dollar business. So let's get started with Tim Berry. I really appreciate you taking the time to chat. I am excited to dive into your brain on business plans and startups. You have a wealth of experience, I think, that we can all learn from. So I'm going to pick your brain and get as much out of you as I can.
It sounds more painful than I expect it will be diving into my brain. It's got to be a better way to phrase that.
Yeah, maybe so. So I guess, you know, I'm always interested, you know, I've actually gone through a lot of your stuff and you are doing a lot. You're a busy person, that's for sure. And, you have a lot of interesting experience, and what I'm curious to know, and I always like to dive into first, is just, you know, where you were before you became a business plan expert, or where you were before you started your first company. You know, really, what are the events and conditions that you were in that led you to your first startup? I don't know what came first, your first startup or your business plan expertise. So trying to see what led you to these things.
Well, first came 10 years in journalism. I was a foreign correspondent in Mexico City.
Cool.
Trying to be a hippie. You know, I'm that generation. I was actually in the Haight-Ashbury in 1966 as a quasi, I mean, I was 18. Runaway sounds dramatic. I was an 18-year-old kid that I told my parents, no, never mind. I went off, joined the hippies, came back. Conditions for me going back was going to Notre Dame instead of where I was planning to go. Notre Dame was to straighten me out. And I guess it did, because I married my wife while I was still an undergrad at Notre Dame. We're still married 46 years later, so that worked. I liked Notre Dame. But I was still kind of a hippie, and I ended up as a journalist in Mexico City in 71 with a master's degree in journalism. It started out as was going to be a PhD in literature at the University of Oregon, but I came to my senses and ended up as a master's degree. I wrote everything Business Week wrote about Mexico was from 1974 to 79 was my stuff.
Really?
And United Press International, I was the night editor in Mexico City. I wrote a bunch of stuff as a journalist. First, standard journalism, kidnappings, hurricanes, volcano eruptions. And then as we had some kids born, money became a factor that it hadn't been. The hippie thing started to wear off when you can't pay the rent. You know?
Exactly, so. Sure, yeah.
So I started doing the business writing, which paid more, and that made me interested in business. So from Mexico City, I quit that to go back to the States. I got accepted. I did an MBA at Stanford, which is where I discovered business planning, which to me was a fascinating combination of words and numbers and sort of stories and dreams and specific steps. I love the way the business plan, the way it was first presented to me in business school, very much connected to Silicon Valley entrepreneurship from the very beginning. I love the way that was a new kind of fiction that you were trying to make into nonfiction.
Sure. And was that the original introduction you had there? Was that a more lean business plan or a traditional lengthier business plan? What kind of business plan?
Oh, we're talking about so long ago that business plans were still sort of crawling out of the morass of being something only huge enterprises did. And were becoming, and we're talking about very early 1980s. So Apple had started, the Silicon Valley, and the business plan, as it became famous in the 80s as a tool to get venture capital, was, oh, in its heyday by middle 80s. That's the business plan I was introduced to. There was no talk of lean.
Right, right.
Our attention spans were longer. We actually thought business plans might be executed over 6 or 12 months. I mean, yes, it was long ago. And back then, there was a likelihood that business plans would be read by potential investors, mm-hmm. As part of the process. I mean, nowadays, I'm very immersed in angel investment these days. I've been in my local group for 8 years now.
Yeah, yeah.
Nowadays, business plans are an essential part of the due diligence process, but as a lot of people say, the pitch and the summary matters more in terms of making a first impression and investors deciding, are we interested in this? And then in today's world, a business plan becomes really important during the due diligence. So only after they're really interested. In the old days, the myth about, well, the lore, the legend of the introduction, you need an introduction, was pretty much true back then, but it was a smaller world in entrepreneurship and introductions were easier to get. And I guess I was also right in the heart of Silicon Valley. So that the whole mythology, or I don't know, the story of the entrepreneur and the business plan and the investor was more likely to be true in the 80s than it's quite different now.
Right, right.
So the lean business plan is, in a way, going back to the fundamentals. There was this cycle where the business plans got bigger and fatter and more pompous.
Right.
And then became less useful because our attention spans changed. Social media comes up, technology comes up. You realize in my first decade, 15 years working with business plans, there was no internet. You know?
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah.
Some of us had email. I was very early with CompuServe and the Source, and then Apple had Apple Link. So some of us had email, but there was no internet.
But just to pause right there, so wouldn't you say, though, and maybe I'm wrong, that even though there was an internet, that still things were changing quickly. So, you know, I guess some of the philosophy now is that you are making a lot of assumptions, and because the market changes so quickly, that a lot of what you put in the business plan, especially if you're doing a 5-year projection, is essentially just a waste of time. So, like, is that still the case, do you believe, or, you know, when you're back in earlier days?
There was always a problem of diminishing returns.
Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah.
From the beginning, that you had to manage a plan as a plan.
Yeah.
And understand that change was likely, more so now, but even then, change was always likely. So
okay.
The use of the business plan as communicator of extensive information,
right,
was more common when I started with it in the 80s, and is much less common now.
Gotcha.
The use of a business plan as a really essential tool for steering real businesses, as in setting priorities and milestones and metrics that you're going to track, and setting expectations and using plan versus actual to develop accountability, that was always, I mean, the fundamentals of business planning when I got to it first, however many years ago that was still the fundamentals. It was about business.
Right.
And it was about doing business, and it was tracking and accountability. And the business plan as pompous document you do once, heave a sigh of relief, thank God you'll never have to look at it again, and throw away. That was never right on, but it was common. It's less common now.
Yeah, yeah. I consulted for someone, I mean, in the past 2 years, and they were adamant about they did a 50 to 70-page business plan. And after we got the wheels turning, you know, we have pivoted so much. I mean, that thing went to the wayside after the first I don't know, 2 months. That was it. Never saw it again. So all that time and all that effort, I'm sure there's some value in it, but the bulk of it was a big waste because it changed so much.
Well, yeah, and the value is that it's supposed to manage change. I have a true story that for me is iconic about the real value of business planning. And it's an absolutely true story involving me and Sabrina Parsons, who is CEO of Palo Alto Software.
Cool.
During the big crash.
Yeah.
2008. We were running at just about to push $10 million a year in revenues. Sabrina had taken over for me as CEO, but I was very involved. I still am. I still own the company, but I'm very much less day to day these days. But she was CEO, so she was running it, and our sales just crashed. It was terrible. You know, we've been doing business planning since the middle 90s, and with monthly plan versus actual review every third Thursday of it. You know, we had the discipline established, and then suddenly the world changes and our sales tumbled to 30% and 40% below plan. Just overnight, that 2008 phenomenon, just before the election, August, September, October, I guess we were sort of a weather vane for entrepreneurship or something, but we were selling business plan software and they just tumbled. So there's the moment. What does business plan and business planning, what's the value when suddenly everything changes? And the value, Adam, became very clear because for the existence of a business plan, we had a really effective dashboard with knobs to turn where the whole collapse was visible to us. And, oh, look, here's what percentage of our revenue is going off to discretionary promotional costs that suddenly aren't working. Here's what percentage is going to non-discretionary. The retail channels were taking percentages off sales. So you're looking at, through your business plan, visibility into, oh my God, what's changed and what we can do with it almost instantly, as opposed to if you don't have a business plan, it's what do we do now? What do we do now with the business plan? Sabrina, and this is to her credit, I was in the background remembering the recession in 2001. Yeah. She was very carefully managing the plan and saying, look, we don't have to let people go until April, given these trends. We can cut here and here and here, and we can stay solvent all the way through April. And if nothing gets better by April, then we'll have to do this. But it did get better in February. So we weathered that recession thanks to business planning without letting people go, which became vital because shortly thereafter, we were back into double-digit growth.
Right. And I like the analogy of it being a dashboard because, you know, as events take place in the marketplace, you could see where the weakness is and how it's affecting you as a business. And then to your point, you look at this dashboard, you look at the weak spots and you look at where you can, turn the knobs, like you mentioned. That's a great way of putting it.
And you need the visibility. It may be that I've seen too many Cirque du Soleil things in Las Vegas, but I was sitting on one of those when I realized a metaphor that works for me of business planning. The acrobats fly, they twirl, they do exactly what they're supposed to do, and they land in the net.
Yeah.
And as they land in the net, I was thinking, oh, that's business planning, because the net distorts itself. When the athlete acrobat hits the net, this is all planned. The net goes to one side and whatever, but all the knots that make up the net hold.
Right. Right.
But it distorts. Well, I think of the knots in the net as these connections we have in a business plan. Revenue has to be connected to sales expenses and marketing expenses, presumably. And then you have your fixed costs, but they're like connecting the dots behind the business, and when things change, then you can see, just like the net distorts, you can see, oh, here our retail revenues are down this much and our direct revenues this much and our margins are so and so and our working capital and here's the credit line. you have that visibility. And I think it's like the net holds, and then you make your adjustments, and everything goes on. But you have to do, and here's the thing, Adam, without the plan versus actual, it's useless. It did, well, I guess there's some utility, if not the 50-page plan, but there's some utility in going through how your business is connected, the revenues, the expenses, and the key strategy. I mean, there is some value in doing a business plan, but it's only a fraction of the value of using the business plan to manage and steer your business, because things will always change.
Right, right.
And that's why the lean plan, because when you get right down to it, you want the core stuff that you're going to manage. Sure. And that's a lean plan, just the core stuff, until you have, if you ever do, and a lot of businesses never do, but until you have a business plan event, which is, oh, I need to show a business plan. The bank loan manager wants it. These angel investors want it. You always have your lean plan. It's always there. And it's always being reviewed and revised. But it's lean. It's just the core stuff that you're going to manage. And in the occasion that you need to produce a business plan for an outsider, well, your lean plan is two-thirds of what you're going to need. You sort of add the dressing, you know, the frosting, here's our summary, here's our descriptions, you know, all that for the outsiders. And you're always doing planning. You're not always doing that big formal plan, but you can if you need it. And if you never need it, don't do it. Just use the lean plan.
Right, right, right. So I guess one of the things I wanted to tap into today is based on that is let's just dive into this lean plan. I mean, so tell me, you have a book, you have a course, you've been kind of, but you've written a few books now on business planning, not just the lean plan. And I want to dive into the lean plan methodology that you have. And if you could tell us a little bit about what that means and how it works. And then the second part of my question is going to be, you know, you wrote multiple books. So are these telling the same story or are they different stories? So if we could dive into what that lean plan is first, that would be great.
Okay. The lean plan, the way I've put it in the books, book, the lean business planning, first of all, understand that it's very short on text. It's bullet points. It's reminders for the owner and the manager. It's not information to be shown to outsiders. It's to be used, not presented.
Gotcha.
So that is background. What does it cover? For me, you need to watch strategy. And that's bullet points. That's what's your focus on? Who's your target market? What's your business offering? How does it match that? How does it match what's different about you? What's special about you? And that's a couple pages of bullet points, really. That's what's the key focus. Focus is essential for real business.
Right.
And then tactics, if you want it full blown, tactics are the marketing plan and the sales plan and the financial plan. But this is just lean. So tactics are bullets to keep track and reinforce and help the team keep focused on things like, what's our pricing strategy relative to others? What are our channels? What are our launch dates? What's our product roadmap? These are bullet points. It's not a lot of text, but it's things that you want to track. So you want to look at every month for a plan versus actual review. Okay, yeah, our strategy. Have things changed? Do we need to, okay, no, strategy is still good. Tactics, yeah. Are we executing? And so we got strategy and tactics. The third part is concrete specifics. Stuff you can track. And that means like milestones, metrics, and responsibilities. That's the core. That's what you're going to track. That creates steering and management. So milestones, it's just the way we are as human. We work towards milestones. It's the product launch. It's the 100th, 1,000th customer. It's the new version. It's the new website. It's the new store. It's what you gather people around your milestones. And the metrics, how are we measuring Facebook likes or Twitter retweets? Are we measuring traffic in stores, our unique visitors on the website, downloads on the app stores? What are we measuring to make sure we're on track? Because stuff you can't measure is wasted. In terms of real planning, you go through that, and yeah, you add fluff and hype if you're presenting it to outsiders, but for your real lean plan, anything you can't measure doesn't belong. Anything you can't track doesn't belong. So that's three out of four: strategy, tactics, and these concrete specifics. And the fourth for me is essential numbers. You can't run a business without a sales forecast and a spending budget and a cash flow plan.
Right.
And there it is. That's a lean plan.
And how does that compare to the plan you're probably, which is pretty popular and you're probably aware of, which is this business model canvas that a lot of people have adopted? It's that one page plan. It talks about a lot of the similar things you're talking about, except there's some different module. It has the 9 modules. Are you familiar with that?
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
How does that compare to your lean model that you're discussing?
And to me, it works very, very well together. You take strategy and tactics, my first two, and you say, that's the lean canvas. But the lean canvas doesn't have milestones or metrics or responsibilities or essential business numbers. And for me, not having those, you don't really have enough planning to give you the value of planning in your business. So if you like the lean canvas and that for you works better than the bullet points of strategy and tactics, go for it. It doesn't matter. It's whatever you like. And the lean canvas is cool. It's intuitive. It's relatively easy. I say a lean canvas plus the milestones, metrics, responsibilities, and essential business numbers, that works great. Another one, Adam, while we're on that, my Palo Alto Software publishes Live Plan, which is about doing a business plan, which will do a business plan with a lot of text if you want to. It doesn't write the text for you. It just has some outline suggestions. You can modify the outline and whatever, but just like the lean canvas can substitute for strategy and tactics in my lean business plan idea, Live Plan has something they call the pitch page, which is a very short, almost one page definition of the key points, who's the market, what are our differentiators, and the financials. And that too can be a lean plan. You take the Live Plan pitch page only, forget the text.
Yeah.
But Live Plan does milestones and metrics, and it does the financials, and there's another lean plan.
Right.
What we're skipping in all cases, until it's needed for business purpose, is those texts that people get sweaty palms over that remind people of the term paper for Mrs. Elliott, the third year in high school, you know, that, oh my God, how am I going to do this, all this text stuff?
Yeah.
No, it's business. You know, the lean plan is the real business. This is what we're going to do. And all of it, of course, in the context that if you just take an hour or two each month to review and revise, and then you've got it. You have to be able to review and revise it, or you lose so much of the utility.
Well, that was what I was going to ask you next is, you know, so one, I like your idea of layering the business model canvas with the lean plan, because you offer another level of depth, which gives more clarity. And I think that the more clarity you have, which is something I've personally learned over the years, the more clarity you have, then the more likely you are going to succeed, because you know what steps to take and you know when to pivot and all those types of things. So to me, that's a great thing. And I always say, if you don't have a strong foundation or business plan, you're just playing darts without a dartboard. And to me, this kind of depth that you offer in the lean plan is a nice addition to that business model.
Yeah, you know, milestones, metrics, essential numbers, come on. It's so much. People don't like to do that sometimes. I mean, I'm an oddity. I do like to do that stuff. a lot of people don't, but you know, if that's hard to do, how much harder is it to run a business without it? And what are you going to do when things change? And things are going to change. You know, I mean, it's like you can't argue against it.
Yeah, I agree.
You asked about my books. I want to add this because it's quick too.
Yeah.
Aside from, I've done a bunch of books that go back, but books on business planning, the first one I did in the late 90s was called Hurdle, the book on business planning. Mm-hmm. And I hate now the title even, because that was the myth of you get over a hurdle. You've done your business plan. It makes me writhe in anguish right now, the title. And the book was that formal business plan that we used in the Silicon Valley in the 80s and 90s. It was the business plan document. It was the traditional business plan for entrepreneurship, angel investment, things like that. Life evolved, business planning evolved, technology evolved. In 2008, I did the Plan As You Go business plan for Entrepreneur Press, which was really lean business planning without that title, without that name. The lean startup meme started with Eric Ries and Steve Blank.
Yep.
After my 2008 book. It was more 09 and 010, 2010. The Plan As You Go was, and what happens, Adam, is this is fundamental for business planning. Keep it short, keep it simple, review it and revise it often. Yeah. So that one, 2008 until 2015, it gets leaner still. And I began to realize in the interim years that, and this was through, I started angel investing in 2009 as a member of a group, and I do a lot of judging and things. So I got much more involved in being on that side of the table. And I began to realize that even angel investors now, everybody wants a leaner plan.
Of course, yeah.
The difference between lean business planning and the plan as you go, the essential core is the same, but plan as you go still had a lot more about generating all that other stuff when you needed it. Uh-huh. And lean business planning, it's a pretty lean book. It's like 140 pages. It's true to its title.
Yeah.
It's saying, just do this and grow it organically, and when you need more, add more. But what's happened in the visible market that entrepreneurs look at with angel investors, mm-hmm. it's pretty much the pitch, the summaries have substituted. Whoops, I can't silence that.
It's okay.
Somebody else may answer it. But anyhow, that's all substituted the for that text summary part of the traditional business plan. In most angel investment situations, we're going to go for the summary, and then for the one, we'll reject, 8 out of 10 just from the summary. And for the two that we don't reject, we're going to see the pitch. And the pitch is where we'll get that summary descriptive information that you used to put in the business plan. And then the plan for due diligence, what we're really looking at then is milestones, metrics, responsibilities, and essential business numbers. So the lean business plan does pretty well for the angel investors these days too.
That's good to know. Yeah, that makes sense. Because I mean, it really shows that you've actually thought through the business. I mean, that's really what they're looking for, that, you know, you're thinking. I mean, there's a big difference when someone says, I have an idea of what I want to do versus actually putting it down on paper. I noticed that when you start putting your ideas on paper, it can be very difficult. And you realize that you don't know it as clearly as you thought you did.
Oh, and the numbers. See, the great fallacy that, just do a pitch, you know, nobody's going to read your business plan anyhow. See, the fallacy in there is you can't really do an effective pitch unless you know those numbers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the numbers, I've been doing angel investment with a group since 09. We've done like, 11, 12 different investments. We would never consider investing in a company that didn't have the essential numbers thought through. Now, we'd never believe them. It's not that they're accurate. It's that we need to see that you've thought it through and we're going to help you. It's sort of a paradox because we don't believe their financials, but if they don't have them, there's no way we can help them then. So those milestones and metrics, they're critical. You can't do your pitch without them, but where people get confused is we're going to assume you have them when you pitch to us. we're going to start asking the kind of questions that if you don't have your business plan in the background, you can't answer our questions. Things will come up with like, wait a minute, what if you had more headcount? Could you grow faster?
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see the difference. The people who have planned their business think for a second and say, well, you know, it might be this, it might be that. I'd like to run the numbers. I'll get back to you. And the people who bought into don't do a plan, just do a pitch, stand there with eyes like deers in the headlight. You know, what? What? You know? Yeah, it's like doing a movie without a screenplay. And then the other one that comes up is, we really like the pitch. This is really cool. This is interesting. You know, send us your business plan.
Right, right, right.
And
so what are you, so as an investor then, I mean, how are you connecting with, or I don't know if it's just startups or established businesses, what are you looking for? How do people get in front of you and those types of things?
I've done it, 90%, almost all of it with an angel investment group. We're one of, I don't know, that's close to 1,000 in the U.S., mine is Eugene in Corvallis, Oregon. I'm in Eugene. We have the University of Oregon. Corvallis is Oregon State.
Yeah.
We're rivals one Saturday in November for football, but we're friends the rest of the year. And we get together. It's about half and half. Most of us are people who've been through startups. There's some HP executives, but we're accredited investors, and we get together and we review startups that come to us through something called gust.com, gust like a gust of air.
Yeah.
It's a platform that's free to the startups, free to us too, where they submit their videos, their summaries, their pitch presentations, and their financials and their business plans. And we'll go through and we'll look in February at about 40 of them and get through and make an investment in May. And then some of us, I just finished doing another investment just actually this week as a follow-on to a company that I really like that I saw first through our angel group, but it didn't get the investment from the group, but I like them very much. So I sort of went on my own with that one.
Interesting. And are you investing as the angel group? Do they invest in certain types of companies? You know, some people are going after either technology or maybe it is, the social entrepreneur category where you're looking for people that are driving certain types of change. It could be environmental or social, whatever it might be. Is there a certain, arena that you're playing in?
These groups tend to cluster around an affinity. I'm aware of another one. For example, that I've been to a lot of meetings, but the geography doesn't work. Irish Angels, I'm a Notre Dame alum, so that Irish Angels joins Notre Dame alumni, and it tends to be in the Midwest, so I haven't joined that one. Mine, the affinity, is the region. We're in the Southern Willamette Valley, so we'll be looking at startups that are in Oregon.
Gotcha.
We have some matching funds that the state puts in, and we have, like so many groups, our affinity is regional. So the decision about is it software or clean tech or consumer products is done by a simple mechanism called a vote, a novel idea, which is we'll look at startups, and there's members of our group who focused entirely on ROI and don't give a damn about clean technology or building jobs in Oregon. And
Sure. There's
some who will vote only for the ones that are doing jobs in Oregon, and some who will vote for the ones that are good for the environment. And so, I tend to vote for software because I understand it and I want to help later. So
we
use a mechanism of a vote to establish which startups get our investment, and it's been, we had consumer products, that one failed already, then two software related, one of which sort of, we got back some of our money, but they were mediocre, one of which failed. Then we had something involving molecular chemistry that is still looking really good and will help people taking chemotherapy. Mm. Then we had one medical technology, a miniature ultrasound that's still looking very good. The one that I'm excited about recently is civilcomments.com, which has a remarkable way of peer review on the spot of comments so that sites that get a lot of comments can keep the value of comments without having to manage the toxic waste that comments become, because the peer review keeps them civil.
Right.
That's called civilcomments.com. And it didn't get our group's investment, but it got some from the New York tech angels and me and some others, and that one's software. So we go around. Last year's was another software, database-driven software, local here to Eugene. And then you do have, to get back to your question, you do have some affinity groups. August.com tends to be a good place to go look if you're an entrepreneur, because you can set up a profile and explore. But there are some that will be based on type of industry or values, like social, or particularly values tend to be more specific, like clean tech or biomed and things like that.
Right. And what did you say? It was august.com?
It's gust, like a gust of air. It's G-U-S-T.
Got it.
So,
I see. Yeah. I'm checking it out.
David Rose, the founder, and I have worked together off and on for years. And he explained to me that it was done originally. The idea was the gust of wind in your sails.
Very clever. I like it. Very cool. So I want to be sensitive to your time. We're at our mark. I don't know if you have time to chat a little bit more, but you let me know.
I have about 5 minutes before I have an 11 o'clock off. Okay. It's 10:35 for me.
Okay, so one quick thing, and then I'm going to just give you a second to let people know how they can find you and some of the stuff that you have going on that you might want to share with them. So my last thing was regarding the business plans. You know, you mentioned to look at a business plan monthly and reassess it. Is that what you're saying? So on a monthly basis, is that a sustained procedure that you do throughout the life of your company?
Absolutely. And I've practiced what we preach. Palo Alto Software is a strong, healthy company without outside investors that's been driven by the third Thursday of every month for more than 20 years now. The key people get together and review plan versus actual and revise the plan.
Interesting. And you brought that company, I read on your site, 0 to 40 employees, multiple $1 million sales, no debt, and 70% market share with no outside investment. I mean, that's a whole other interview that I want to dive into.
Well, that's, ask me to talk about that, and yeah, you'll have trouble shutting me up.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting story. So we definitely would like to learn how you did that and what the success tips might be coming from there. So very interesting stuff. So to be respectful of your time, I just want to give you an opportunity, you know, let people know your website and how they can get in touch with you and check out your stuff.
Oh, yes, and thank you for that. Start with Live Plan. Live, as in L-I-V-E, liveplan.com is the web app that Palo Alto Software publishes that's based on my writings. I'm chairman and founder of that company. So liveplan.com. For my blogging, I do about 8 posts a week, and you can get a consolidated, because I post on a bunch of different sites, but blog.timberry.com. Gives you the collected my blog posts on different sites at blog.timberry.com. And on that site, you can click to get to leanplan.com, which is where I have the complete text of my book on lean business planning. It's there for free. There are sidebars that will invite you to order the online course or order the book, but the whole text of that book is free at leanplan.com if you just put it on your tablet, Lena. I mean, if you read it on the web.
Yeah, very cool. Awesome. Well, Tim, again, I really appreciate you having this conversation. It was really helpful to walk through the process of using a business plan and the importance of it, and even the insights around what the investors are looking for. That's great. So appreciate it. And, you know, whenever you need anything, you know how to reach me.
Well, congratulations on the publication. Looking forward to having that. I want to be reading that soon.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll make sure you get your hands on it.
It looks like a great morph between what used to be the old-fashioned journalism, saving some of those values, and the new world. So congrats on conceiving that.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Okay.
All right, Tim. Take care now.
You too, Adam.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's all for this episode. Your next step is to join the Change Creator Revolution by downloading our interactive digital magazine app for premium content, exclusive interviews, and more ways to stay on top of your game. Available now on iTunes and Google Play, or visit changecreatormag.com. We'll see you next time where money and meaning intersect, right here at the Change Creator Podcast.